Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Dort for the win. It's good. Pokuševski takes flight as SGA plays through the contact, banks it in on the foul.
What is up? Welcome to the uncontested post-game edition. I'm your host for the evening, Jacob Niffin. I've got my man, Kami Amarabian, along for the ride.
I am here, and I'm ready to talk some Thunder basketball.
I figured we'd just spend this whole podcast talking about Lincoln Riley rumors. That's a joke. We're not going to do that. The Thunder lose to the Washington Wizards 101-99 in a highly competitive game, Kamiar. Thunder had a chance to win it at the buzzer. Ball goes halfway down. Rattles back out for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The Thunder rack up another loss that would put them at 6-13 on the season. They are climbing those tankathon standings as we speak, up to the sixth best odds, only a half game ahead of San Antonio, who won up in Boston tonight. So although the Thunder aren't racking up wins, they are getting better and better lottery odds. Before we dive too deep into this one, shout out to everyone that's joining us on the stream tonight. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can watch us live after every Thunder postgame and Sundays at 9 p.m. for our weekly show. If you listen to the podcast version of this, hey, what's up? Thanks for downloading our show. We appreciate you. Make sure to hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcast at. Drop a 5-star rating, screenshot it, DM it to us on any of our social media channels. I'll mail you some uncontested stickers. I've been sending out. The people at the post office are becoming very familiar with my face as I show up and I say, hey, I need another 10 stamps and some international stuff as well, because we've been mailing to all corners of the world. So drop that 5-star, send us your address. We'll send you some uncontested stickers that are pretty, pretty dope. So call me out. This one, like I said, was a pretty competitive one. The Thunder got up by as much as 12 there. Yep. in the first half, up by as much as 10, 25-15 in the first quarter, but then ended the first quarter down 27-25. So they're up by two when mm-hmm. they were up by 10 at one point. Mm-hmm. And I thought, coming off an ankle injury, that first quarter performance by Shai was really, really nice. And then he went downhill after that. So before we talk about the downhill of Shai, let's talk about first quarter Shai that I thought was maybe the best Shai we've seen all season.
I wouldn't say it's the best Shai we've seen all season. I do think he was really, really efficient. I thought he was able to get his shots where get to his spots to get to his shots. And he made those shots early on. I think he's had far more like fascinating and fun games other than what we saw tonight. I think you saw a very efficient first quarter, and we thought he was about to start cooking the entire game, and then it looked like he was one of the other guys running out there. It didn't look like he was anything special after that, like, yeah, if we're being honest.
I totally agree with that. I felt like that first quarter, I've talked about it a lot on the show, I felt like in the first quarter, he played very much within the flow of the offense. There wasn't really anything forced. He was taking what was coming to him. He was making good reads and good passes, getting to the rim. I kind of feel bad for Raul Neto, however you say his name, of the Washington Wizards, who everyone on the Thunder just wanted to body that man. Shea got in early on that, and I thought he just played very much within the game in that first quarter, and then I thought after that, he started pressing quite a bit. Second quarter,
it didn't help that he came in the game when OKC was down, and like as a leader of the team, you feel like you have to put the team on your back, and so sometimes he would go out of the rhythm of the game, force some things, and just do some things in general that were so unnecessary. For example, later on down the game, you'd see him, or even early in the game, he would sidestep a three or step back a three, and he was wide open. Like, just take the shot. What are you doing?
I felt like someone, or he'd catch it while he was open and then pause for a second for a defender to get there to back it out in ISO, where it felt like he should have just been going off the catch.
Very weird. It was very weird.
Yeah. But with all that said, there was a handful of plays that he made that I thought were really nice, where the ball just like rolled off the rim, or a three that rattled in and out, that if a few of those go in, I think it's, as far as an efficiency standpoint, it's a much different game for him. He still ends the night with 15 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists, 1 steal, and only 1 turnover. So he still had a really balanced night, even though he only went 7 of 16 from the field. 0 of 4 from 3
He was on triple-double watch at the end of the first quarter. We're like, hey, he was on triple-double watch at the end of the first quarter. And I think he had like 8, 4, and 5 or something like that. Yeah. Something like that. And he ends up with 15, 8, and 9. And it's just like, okay, well, obviously it went downhill pretty quickly from there.
Definitely. Second quarter, the Washington Wizards win that quarter 31-27. Thunder go into the break, come out, and just put up a putrid third quarter, only scoring 14 points. I think that was really the nail in the coffin in this one. Lots of opportunities to kind of push on the Wizards a little bit and get a lead or extend a lead. They just couldn't do it. Then come out in the fourth quarter and score 31, a really efficient fourth quarter for the Thunder that culminated with a handful of really nice plays. An inbound play from Oklahoma City where Shea was off ball, came around a screen, caught it, and then nobody came to him. So he just drove in for a dunk to cut the game to a 2-point game. The Thunder got a really great stop on that final Washington possession where Lou Dort just blanketed Bradley Beal, tried to not even let him catch the ball, ended up with a Washington miss. The Thunder clear a rebound, have about 3 seconds left, struggle to get the ball in, and Shea kind of shoots a runner three at the buzzer. That was the only thing he could really get off. And damn thing got halfway into the rim and then bounced back out. I thought it was going to go in. Well, but
what I thought was weird is that they only gave him 2.8 seconds. They caught the ball, and you can see Daigneault calling for a timeout as late as 4.8 seconds left. And they still let the 2 seconds tick off, and they're like, nope, sorry, can't do anything about it. And it's like, how can you not go and review that? Doesn't that seem like, isn't that something that's reviewable, is when to take a timeout and when time is, and they just didn't do it?
And it felt like, because I was in the arena tonight, whenever he called the timeout and like they blew the play dead, there was like 3.8 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah.
And then when they came back, there was 2.8. And so I was very confused because I figured they called the timeout right on the rebound to set something up. And so I don't know why they didn't review that, or if they did and what they looked at. It's very confusing to me, and ended up, I mean, kind of costing them, because if you call a timeout right on the rebound, you can advance the ball up to midcourt. Right. And then if you have 5 seconds inbounding at midcourt, I mean, you can run an action first. You can run a catch and a dribble handoff and a pass or something, you know, to try to get like a Lou Dort open in the corner or something. I don't know.
I think Daigneault was pretty upset about that. I mean, like, he called it what he thought was on the time, what was on the rebound. So I think a lot of people were in the same wavelength there.
Definitely. So that's kind of the game breakdown. Again, Thunder lose at 101-99, dropped to 6-13 on the season. Colmier, let's jump into some players and some stats. The first thing that really jumped out to me on this game is that every player that got time scored. There's not a single player on the roster tonight that got minutes in this game that didn't score. Lowest points were Favors. He had two. And then Muscala had three. Ty Jerome had four. Trey Mann and Poku both have seven. Baisley has eight. JRE 10. Williams and Giddy 11. Shea 15. And Dort 21. So offensively, it felt like it was a
one of these is not like the other.
It felt like a very, yeah, I felt like a very balanced game though, where everybody kind of got looks. I mean, Ty Jerome with the lowest field goal attempts in the game at two, and Shea with the most at 16. It was a pretty balanced offensive attack, I felt like.
I kind of had a problem with it. I mean, like, what is your goal with the season? That's what they're working toward. What is your goal toward the season? Is it to get better as a team? Is it to get young guys prepared? Is it to, I don't know, get these guys accustomed to the game with like an old head in the game? Like, you start all of your young guys, but Kenrich Williams is getting 24 minutes, which is five fewer minutes, than Josh Giddey. Why is Josh Giddey only getting 29 minutes and Kenrich Williams is getting 24? Then you go to Derek Favors. If you wanted to trade him, why is he only getting 10 minutes? And my man's is not, I mean, like the guy, like he, the man, the way the man's playing, he is not getting traded this year.
Yeah. I was about to say, I don't think you want to showcasing Favors maybe against the Thunder's best interest, like, at this point.
After looking and reflecting about how they've used him this year, you know, about almost 20 games in the season, it definitely looks like they're just going to be using him as cap filler because his contract is up next year. Like, so he has 1 year left on his contract and they have so many of these tiny contracts. They're going to use that $10 million to meet that cap floor because, I mean, the man's isn't getting traded this year. And yeah. Then, I mean, Trey Mann, I think, deserved more minutes. If we're being honest, I think JRE, I think he deserved more than 23 minutes. Mm-hmm. Baisley was, I mean, defensively, he was okay. I mean, offensively, I kind of saw what you were talking about the other day. He is athletic and he's got skills offensively. He can dribble and go in and out, but he doesn't finish. And then you look at Poku, I mean, and Poku has flashes of being a really, really smart basketball player, but also playing within the offense. And when Baisley is not shooting a spot up corner three, it feels like he is not playing within the offense ever. He just takes the ball like, oh, I'm not at the rim or I'm not at the 3-point line. I think I'll just back out to the 3-point line and go ISO and literally does nothing else. Mm-hmm. And so I just had a lot of issues with this, with these minutes. I'm cool with the Jerome minutes. The Trey Mann is playing fantastic.
Trey had a really nice game.
Trey had a really nice. I'm surprised that it felt like he had more than 7 points. It felt like he had at least 11, 12, which is weird. He affected the game pretty well. I mean, it didn't help that Gafford guy got like 12 blocks by himself.
He was eating. Let's pause on Trey for just a second because I want to talk a little bit more about him. Whenever I covered the Blues opening game for the G League, I talked to Trey, who said that he was down there to focus on his defense. And then, so I think the coaching staff is really looking for him to be a better defender. How did you feel about the way Trey defended tonight? Cause he found himself on Brad Beal multiple times.
I thought he defended his ass off. I thought he was really good. He was getting into opponents without actually using his hands. That's something that he can easily learn from his teammate Lou Dort, but also the coaching staff that's there that obviously teaches defense pretty well. One thing about the OKC Thunder is that offensively, they may not be the greatest. I mean, they're still obviously working at that. They're young. They're the youngest team in the NBA. But what's been impressive, not just for us, but for several NBA analysts, is how good OKC plays defensively, how well they play on closeouts, how well they play defense cohesively and without fouling for the most part. That's not just an Oklahoma City Thunder, like, you know, people that follow the that team in particular, but people around the league notice that this is a good defensive team that's going to stay in games, and they're going to get back into games with using their defense. And that's something that's really, really special. So good for Trey, man. Again, him going 3-11, him having some pretty wide open shots. He got a little sauced up there. He had like a step back three, and he tried like a couple in a row because he was getting open. And
the level of separation he can get off the dribble is really impressive. Like it's very, very impressive. And whenever he can get into more of a flow and really find that stroke, I think that could, it's kind of what this team needs right now, right? Is a guy that can just make a bucket from the outside, because they've struggled mightily from shooting on the perimeter. So if Trey can find that, yeah, I think that's something they could really use.
Yeah, and he's another guy that you add onto the court that's talented. He's a ball, that would be a ball handler. I mean, like you could have a lineup of Shea, Giddy, Dort, Trey Mann, and then plug, I don't know, who'd you plug? Poku at the five and just see what happens.
Sign me up, baby.
And it's because you got Shea, who's 6'6". He can play
small. Hey, Trey Mann's 6'5".
You've got Josh Giddy, who's like basically 6'9". He said he's 6'8", then goes into another reporter and says he's 6'9". You got Trey Mann,
who's 6'5". Nobody can convert the metric system.
Man Lou Dort is like, he's the shortest one on the court, but he doesn't look too short, which is just interesting to think about.
Lou plays way bigger than he is.
You could really, really run out that kind of lineup, and you have several guys. All those guys can handle the ball. So I think that's very, very interesting.
Definitely. Another interesting little nugget. I told you that every player that played tonight for the Thunder scored. Every player that played for the Thunder tonight also attempted a three-point shot.
Don't like that.
It's kind of fascinating.
Derek Favors should never be taking 3-point shots.
He's the only one that I'm against it for. Hey, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, 2 of 3 from three again. This man is shooting 40% from the from the 3-point line.
He's reliable, but I hate him starting at the five. Oklahoma City needs a real center, and it needs not to be Chet Holmgren, because that dude is slow as heck.
I'm like, kind of incredibly a fan slow. Of JRE. They actually, on ESPN.com, they have the Thunder not starting a center and starting two power forwards. I'm kind of in favor of Robinson Earl starting at the four. I think that's interesting when they get legit five.
That's how I would start him. I would start him at the four. I mean, just like any normal team. He's also, 6'8", 6'9"? But he moves really, really well. He moves laterally quite well. He's from Villanova. He spent a year there under Jay Wright, and Jay Wright's a fantastic coach fundamentally. And so you saw him take a couple charges. He's a good big man as far as pick and pop. And so I'm really excited to see what he does. And like, yeah, he stayed a year in college, but I mean, like, it feels like he stayed all three or four years in college, and that's not the case. So I'm really happy that Oklahoma City, you know, found another guy outside of the first round that's going to be a contributor to this team for a while. I mean, Lou Dort, we'll see what that contract situation looks like.
He's going to be contributing
for a while, and he wasn't even drafted, right? He signed a free agency.
Undrafted free agent, yeah.
And so I'm excited about that. And then you look at your first-round picks and Terrence Ferguson, who are basically out of the league, and they're going to go play somewhere else. And then Bazley, if he doesn't improve as far as his flow of the game, his understanding of the game, because defensively he's fantastic, sure.
I thought he's been really good defensively, yeah.
But, I mean,
I thought Kuzma got the better of Bazley a little bit tonight. And I was kind of thinking, like, is Kyle Kuzma just a souped up Darius Bazley? I feel like there's some similarities there.
I think there's two different mentalities there.
I think that's fair. I feel like the style of basketball they want to play, that I feel like Bazley wants to be like a Kyle Kuzma. Like, that's the style of basketball he plays.
I think we all wanted Bazley to be like Josh Giddey. And that's the chance that Oklahoma City took.
That is very fair.
And I think it's very apparent that Josh Giddey is the leader on the court when Shea's off the court, and even going 4-12 tonight, and his box score early on wasn't that fantastic. Still finishes 11-7-4. He goes 0-2. Of course, like any rookie, and this team in general is not a good free throw shooting team. And so Josh Giddey, I mean, I think he deserved more than 29 minutes. I think JRE deserves more than 23 minutes, especially if they have that bromance going on. Why are you giving? And then again, if the point of this entire team is to get better, if the point of this entire team is to make your young men more valuable and to put them into real NBA situations, why are you playing Kenrich Williams 24 minutes?
Yeah.
He's 26, 27. He's not a part of this long-term plan. I think at one point, he might really like this team, and that's awesome. He has no business playing 24 minutes. Could I see him playing 15 minutes and then you take away all Derek Favors' minutes and then you dump them all on Josh Giddey, you dump them all on JRE? Yeah, you'd even dump some Mike Muscala's way and Ty Jerome. I really just don't like the amount of minutes they played those guys. I mean, like at the end of the day, your goal is to develop and not to win games. And I mean, they're competitive and that's fun, but
yeah,
I'm not saying they should look like the Rockets who are refusing to play John Wall, but I'm saying that if your goal is improvement, you need to get these young guys on the court because you saw what Trey Mann could do in the G League. That's why I said, okay, so he's going to start the parade now. They're going to be summer league champs next year. Like, look at what Josh Giddey, JRE, Trey Mann, look at all those dudes are doing right now.
Can you imagine if they all three play summer league next year?
That'd be fun.
With say the Thunder get like
in poker too.
I have a hard time seeing them play Josh Giddey at summer league next year.
Joseph Dieterman says they're selling on Kenrich. Yeah, well, do you think teams would take Kenrich and Derek at the same time for like? And what would you want from that?
That's tough. I think Kenrich Williams, I tweeted it from the account tonight, I think Kenrich Williams could be in the 8-man rotation of nearly any team in the league. I just think he's the type of player that I think every coach wants. He plays his ass off. You can throw him basically 2 through 4. He'll defend anybody. He's tough as nails. He'll rebound.
I just remember thinking when he was at TCU, he was such an awkward ball handler, and he still is a very awkward ball handler, but for some reason, it just works for him.
Yeah.
And so good for him.
And shout out to him for carving himself. I mean, he was basically out of the league. The New Orleans Pelicans had to sign him to salary match the Steven Adams trade. That's why he ended up in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, those TCU teams, they were gritty. And they really, because, like, I know you're not too much into college hoops, but I pay attention to a lot of it, especially, of course, the Big 12. And Kenrich Williams, that Desmond Bane kid that's playing for Memphis, I think, right mm-hmm. now. All those guys, they're cut from the same cloth. They're very, very scrappy. They're typically good shooters. They like to play defense. They'll do anything to get on that court. And so good for Kenrich for actually, carving a name out for himself, not with just with the Pelicans, but with the Thunder. And the Joseph Uni, you bring up a good point, but man, like to what extent you just play him all the way through February and just like, hey, he's here. You like what would you want in return for Kenrich? Yeah. You gonna get another second rounder?
I mean, I don't know if you can get a first rounder for him. Maybe you can get like a heavily protected first for him or something. I don't know. So let's move on, because there's another guy I wanted to talk about real quick. Because I know you are very conflicted on him. I wanted to kind of see what you thought, because I thought he played a good game tonight. Alexei Pokuševski, 19 minutes. 7.6 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal. Should have had 3 assists, but got called for a charge that I didn't agree with, but it was a very nice pass from Poku. And Daigneault said post-game that he actually thought about leaving Poku in to close the game. He subbed him out with about 5 minutes to go and put Baisley back in there, who promptly caught a pass on a cut, made a layup, and then splashed a three. And I was like, okay, Baisley. 5 points and 2 possessions. That's the most efficient you've been in like a month. So good for him on that. But how did you feel about Poku's game tonight, and specifically playing within the team construct?
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think he played really well within the team's philosophy. There were a couple of times that I was like, what are you doing? But that's
pretty normal. He went rogue a few times, but that's, yeah, well, I like to call that the Poku shit. He just does Poku shit.
That's pretty normal, especially for a 19-year-old that's still really, really young, still feeling himself out. He's still like, you know, he's still putting on muscle, still putting on weight. He's got a high IQ. He's talented. He obviously went coast to coast. Had a couple really fancy moves and a finger roll, which was
again
just like
on Raul Nato.
It's just like just incredible.
The best part of that, Kamyar, is he smoked the finger roll and had to get a put back.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that part. And but like he defensively, he still has a long way to go for me. Like it blows my mind. Like yes, Poku, you are like what, 7 foot tall. And you are still defending guys with your arms down. Why do you do this? And there are so many guys like Raul Neto or in guys, the three that are literally half a foot shorter than him and that don't have half his wingspan. Of course, that's an exaggeration. More these people have more than half his wingspan, but like, there are so many chances that he could actually affect the game blocking from the weak side as a wing. And just doesn't do it. I mean, like, again, you saw the Thunder. What was it? I saw the stat earlier. There were a couple of stats I was looking at. Assists, they out-assisted the Wiz. And they should have, of course, you know, we talk about potential assists on this podcast so many times because the Thunder and Mark Daigneault, their team, they just can't make shots. They're just not very good shot makers, other than Trey Mann, who just also went 3 of 11. They're just a young team. Mm-hmm. And so they won the assist battle 23-17. But oh my god, look at the blocks, dude! 12-4.
Yeah,
in this game, and it shouldn't be like that. I mean, JRE, he's a small ball. He's not small. He's a small ball five, and he's a four. He should never be playing the five legitimately. I know, like, he loves the Warriors and Draymond Green, and he wants to play that style of ball. And OKC probably will be able to one day, considering just, like, how big Josh Giddey is. And Josh Giddey may not be a great one-on-one defender, but he's a very good positional defender. He knows where to get his feet in place. That's also because his mom and dad played sports, and he was basically coached to be a basketball player his entire life. And also he talked crap about the NBA or other leagues, I suppose, college and the G League, because the NBL, he's basically saying, is full of grown ass men that mm-hmm. would beat you to hell. And so that also prepared him for the game. But I mean, I don't know. Poku's Poku. He's be using his length more. And that's the thing. And his jump shot's a little bit higher. His jump shot's a little bit more elevated. It's less push shot. He's got
He's got like a little catch at the 3-point line and take one dribble in and hit like a little midi pull up that I think looks really nice. The three ball still looks kind of iffy, but I think the little mid-range pull up actually looks really nice. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought he played very much within the flow of the game tonight. He had a few Poku moments, but I thought for the most part, he looked really good. He did hit that three, was that in the fourth quarter, and gave like a really big fist pump. Like he was super stoked that one finally went down. But last year was all about flashes of potential with him. And I think this year is more like they're trying to make him realize he has to earn his minutes and he has to play within some sort of system and construct and flow.
You have a role. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that's starting to get there. You know, we're like you mentioned, almost 20 games in, we're about a fourth of the way into the season. And I think now is the time we can start getting a little bit of things that we can take away and pinpoint. And I think Poku's kind of learning to play that role now. And that's a good thing for a 19-year-old. So let's end with Josh Giddey, because you mentioned him there just a few times. First, defensively, I thought he played good defense again tonight. He understands angles. He's not the most athletic guy in the court, but mm-hmm. I feel like he gets to spots very well. Like there was a play today where he was guarding Kuzma, who came off a screen coming back up to the top of the key and curled off it. And Josh knew where he was going and just tried to beat him to the spot. And I don't know. I mean, I think defense is a lot of IQ in a way, and Josh has that. And so that was one of my big Josh takeaways today. We got to talk about the passing. I mean, we always do, but the kind of no look left hand whip pass to the cutting Kenrich Williams, maybe my favorite pass of his of the season. And then he had a pass to Lu Dort there to start the second half, where he like, it was almost like a quarterback. Whenever the defender's not looking, you just throw it over his head. Really impressive stuff by him.
Which one of those was the cross court bounce pass across the entire key and made one bounce in the key and made it to the actual offensive player?
That might have been the Kenrich Williams pass that I'm thinking of. Yeah,
that was special.
Insane. And then the thing that jumped out to me tonight, Kamyar, you mentioned that he did not have a super efficient scoring. And I thought he missed a lot at the rim. 4 of 12 tonight.
He tried to dunk again. He tried to dunk several times, and then
he met Daniel Gafford.
And then Daniel Gafford promptly swatted his crap. Yeah, yeah.
Also, Daniel Gafford sounds like somebody that lives next door to Bilbo Baggins.
I was just...
It's a very Hobbit name.
I was just like, Rudy Gobert doesn't even yeah. do this to OKC. How is this Daniel Gafford guy just coming in and just like completely wiping out anything OKC tries to do in the middle of the lane? And maybe that's the reason why Shea was so inefficient tonight, because he wasn't able to get to his spots like after the first quarter, especially when they put KCP on him. Gafford played 27 minutes, and then when he wasn't in, Montrezl Harrell was like making basically all of the buckets he could that shouldn't have gone in. I don't know how half those shots went in.
Yeah, good for him. But the other thing that from Giddey that really jumped off the page to me tonight, we've watched him the past two games be the primary ball handler, really never be off the ball offensively. He's setting everybody else up tonight, off the ball a lot more for him as Shea had the ball in his hands. But Giddey has really nicely timed cuts to the basket. And when you think about it, that's not that surprising, because as a playmaker and a high IQ player in what he is, he's typically passing to those cutters. And so he understands when to cut. And so whenever he's off ball, he gets to do that. And at 6'8", a 6'8" guy cutting to the rim and catching a pass where he doesn't even have to dribble, it's typically a pretty good thing. He had one from Shea early on. He had another two or three cuts tonight that, to me, were just very high IQ, instinctual, like, understanding how to move on a basketball court. And that's, I mean, part of Giddey's game moving forward, I think, is going to be him learning to play a little more off ball, because if he's playing next to Shea, they're going to share on ball duties.
He's going to have to learn how to shoot the ball.
Yes, definitely so. But the cutting to me was something positive.
I mean, like the man grew up with a ball in his crib. I mean, his parents, his dad's a basketball coach, and not like some like local basketball coach, like a like legitimate like high ranking basketball coach. And
yeah, both parents played pro ball.
They both played pro ball, and so he knows the game. I mean, he's been coached his entire life, and so like for me to say he's instinctual, like yeah, of course he should be instinctual in high IQ, because literally he learned the game from his own coaches, but from his own parents, and so they know what real basketball looks like, especially in the NBL, where there are a lot of good players. Like if you had all the players in Australia that actually went and played for Australia during the Olympics, and you had all the players from Canada that were able to go to Canada and play for Canada during the Olympics that were able to actually play, or that were unable to play, Australia and Canada are right up there with the best countries as far as basketball in the world. And so, I mean, Josh is just highly coached. He knows where to go with balls. He knows where to go with spots. And it just also helps that he likely had these skills at such a young age that he was able to fine tune some of the things he likes best, which is finishing softly at the rim. He does like to finish pretty soft, especially he likes to go reverse a lot, which I think is fun, even though he should dunk the ball more. And of course, just the no look passes, which is incredible.
I think as he gets stronger, I mean, he's 19 years old right now. When he gets 22, 23, and he gains weight and he gets into an NBA gym with NBA trainers and puts muscle on, I think you'll see him be even more efficient at the rim as he's able to move guys around. And I think that's when you'll see him maybe start dunking a little more.
I like dunks.
So awesome. I think that'll do it for us tonight. Hey, if you joined the live stream tonight, thanks again. We had a lot of people in here hanging out, so we really appreciate that. If you listen to the podcast version, again, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. If you have not already, drop that 5-star rating, send it to us. We will send you some uncontested stickers. Everyone wants stickers. Throw it on your car, put it on your computer, put it on your wife's car. I don't care. Put it anywhere. Once again, the Thunder lose to the Washington Wizards 101-99. We'll be back with you guys again Sunday night at 9 p.m. Central Time for our weekly live stream show, an hour long of us talking Oklahoma City Thunder and NBA-wide basketball. So make plans, come hang out with us Sunday evening, get your beverage of choice and chill with us. We'll have a great time. Until then, you guys have a great Saturday. Enjoy Bedlam if you're in Oklahoma, and we will talk to you soon. Until then, and as always, Thunder up.